Emmy Award-winning series Breaking Bad chronicled the transformation of Walter White, a mild-mannered high school chemistry teacher played by Bryan Cranston, into a ruthless and deadly crystal meth kingpin. It ended in 2013 after 6 seasons.
The show also starred Aaron Paul as Walter White's soulful punching bag and partner in crime, Jesse Pinkman. Now series creator Vince Gilligan has written and directed a new Netflix movie starring Aaron Paul that explores what happens to Jesse in the immediate aftermath of Breaking Bad's finale. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Glenn Weldon. We're talking about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Also joining us from Virginia remotely is Linda Holmes. Hey, Linda.
Hey, Glenn.
And in our fourth chair today, all the way from St. Petersburg, Florida, is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Hey, Eric.
Hey.
So a quick word to all the listeners out there who haven't watched or didn't finish Breaking Bad. You've got a decision to make. We can't talk about the sequel to Breaking Bad without at least partially spoiling the series finale of Breaking Bad. That said, one of our panelists is in the same boat you are. They didn't watch the series and is coming at this with fresh eyes. So factor that into your decision. Also factor this in. We all kind of dug it. So if you want to go see it now before we start talking about it. All right. So here's the spoiler bit. In the finale of Breaking Bad, Jesse Pinkman, who has been beaten up in pretty much every sense of the term over the course of the series, has been forced by a group of Nazis, long story, to keep cooking the signature blue meth that he and Walter White have made a criminal empire out of. He's literally held captive, like chained to the meth lab, and until he's rescued by Walter White, who dies in the attempt. So the last time we see Jesse, he is fleeing that desert compound in an El Camino owned by one of his dead captors, even as the police descend on the compound. It's a great cathartic moment because he's crying, he's laughing. It's also a deliberately ambiguous moment because we're wondering, as we see this happen, will he get away? And if he does get away, just precisely exactly how will he get away? And that is the question that El Camino answers in some depth. So, Linda Holmes, I'm going to start with you. In the Google Doc where we put notes to guide this discussion, producer Jessica suggested the questions, did we need this movie and do you want it? Two very different questions, I think. What was your relationship to Breaking Bad and how did this movie impact it?
I really, really loved Breaking Bad. I'm not always into crime stories, but I loved Breaking Bad. And this movie was very satisfying to me. I wrote a piece about it. And what I said was it actually rebalanced some of the things that frustrated me about the finale. I actually wanted to see a little bit more about the consequences of all the things that Walter had done. And because this is a movie that is so much about the trauma that Jesse has experienced, it actually gave me a little bit of that that I was craving. So I really enjoyed it. And I thought it really added to the, it really rounded out the series for me as somebody who always felt very sympathetic to Jesse.
Stephen Thompson, you came at this fresh, as perhaps some listeners did. Perhaps they were roped in by their husbands over the weekend at a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Faust also came at this fresh. So, he came at this with a big take. What's yours?
Well, I don't come 100% fresh. I watched the first few episodes of Breaking Bad and then kind of checked in and out over the course of the series. I knew what happened, but I wasn't deeply invested in every nook and cranny of the story going in. And I really liked it. I had the same reaction to it that Linda did. This is a more subdued story. Jesse is usually a very animated character, and here he is carrying literal and figurative scars. This is a story about PTSD and survivor's guilt and the wages of moral decline, just as the show has been. And in that way, I think it follows a perfect continuum from the show, which is kind of about that slippery slope into Breaking Bad and what that ends up meaning. This is a little bit slower. I think people who enjoyed the kind of big, booming action set pieces of Breaking Bad, there's not as much of that. I mean, Jesse himself, who is usually a little bit of a funnier character, a little bit of comic relief on Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. isn't given a lot of opportunities to do that here for reasons that are completely understandable. But I really dug it, even if there were clearly callbacks to things that didn't resonate as much with me as somebody who wasn't completely in on the show.
Sure, because as many action set pieces as there were in the show, there was also a lot of very slow, process-oriented yeah. unpacking of exactly how and why things would happen. For example, Faustino, when he was watching it, stopped at about 15 minutes in and said, was the series this slow?
Hmm.
But an interesting thing happened over the course of the movie. Jesse needs to get money and is constantly frustrated in the getting of said monies. And Faustino was very quickly all in. Come on. We just want him to get the money. Come on. Come on. It happened so quickly. I think that's a testament to both the writing and especially to Aaron Paul's performance. Now, Eric, I just want to get your take because I want to know as a TV critic, was there enough in here to elevate it above fan service?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, this is Jesse Pinkman's evolution. This is the way in which all of the heartbreak and hardship and awfulness that he had to endure because he chose to align himself with Walter White. Like he was like Job in a weird way. He had all of this terribleness visited on him because he chose to throw in his lot with Heisenberg. But at the end of it, he has become a man. And it is the movie shows him as an immature, young, you know, empty-headed person. And then at the end of it, he's wizened. He's realized who he's hurt. He's realized how he's been hurt. And he's going forward much more mature and ready to be a person, ready to be a man, ready to take responsibility for the things he's done. And this movie is that whole arc. We get to see it in one movie. And so that's what I loved about this. And Vince Gilligan has this very specific storytelling style where he will pile up small details to tell you the story of what the character is experiencing in that moment. And some of the details you'll get if you're coming to the scene fresh. But some of the details will resonate if you know the history of that character, if you know what they've done before. And I think the movie gives you enough information that if you're coming fresh, you can understand a lot of it. But, you know, I recommended in my review that people at least watch the finale episode of Breaking Bad to get a sense of what Jesse did before he's in the moment when you meet him. Because when you see him have these interactions with Todd, it adds weight to know that he winds up killing him. There's one level you can experience it if you don't know the show, and then there's a whole other level of understanding of the dynamics between these characters and the journeys they're on if you really know what they've been through with each other.
Right. You mentioned the character Todd. He's played by Jesse Plemons. Todd is the nephew of one of the Nazis in this group, Oh Nazis. This movie takes place partially in flashback, in which Jesse Plemons is a big part of it. And I think that speaks to, just as you were saying, Eric, that speaks to something important about both the series and the movie, because the critique that this has been getting by critics and also by a lot of folks on Twitter, if it gets one, is, yeah, this is good, was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And I want to push back on the unnecessary thing, because as much as I will agree that from a purely plot level, the ending of Breaking Bad, when it concerned Jesse, worked nicely, thematically and emotionally, I think the finale was missing something that the show wasn't. The show was always about Walter White, focused on Walter White, his downfall, his descent into this kind of greed and sociopathy. Jesse Pinkman, as you said, Stephen, started off as comic relief, but quickly became the show's heart.
Right.
You know, he was a small town crook dragged into Walter White's orbit, and he was forced to do things he didn't want to do. Now, he did them, but that reluctance on his part was functioned in the show as the audience's safety valve, right? Mm-hmm. So because there was a toxic fandom that developed around the show that just wanted Walter White to get everything he wanted without any repercussions and got really angry at things that they saw was in his way, Jesse was the show's attempt to signal to the audience, didn't always work, but attempt to signal that these decisions Walter was making were toxic and horrible and destroying the people around him. Now, in the early seasons, this was mitigated a lot by the fact that it was fun to watch him go toe-to-toe with drug lords.
Right.
But as the show wound down, Jesse decides to leave the life, which causes Walter to turn on him, which leads to his capture by Nazis, Jesse's capture by Nazis and abuse. And at that moment, something important left the show. The emotional balance got thrown off because with Jesse sidelined, you don't have these intersecting arcs anymore. You see this abuse happen over and over again. But there's no moral compass anymore. There's no checks and balances. So the show pivots in those last moments to having the villains be a bunch of Nazis,
right,
as opposed to Walter White's descent, as opposed to his villainy, which always seemed disingenuous to me, always seemed like it was in conflict with the show's stated premise. So, you know, Walter got a short little two-episode redemption arc at the end, but Jesse's reluctance and, most importantly, his moral horror at what he's done was a constant theme over the course of the entire series that just went away. So Breaking Bad was about Walter's moral descent. It was also about Jesse's fitful, hesitant moral ascent. And we got denied that culmination. And I think that's what this movie finally delivered, that ending that we so desperately required. Linda, do you agree?
I do agree. I think that, Vince Gilligan said around the time of the Breaking Bad finale, he said, I think people are going to find it very satisfying, and made reference to Walt kind of getting to go out on his own terms. And I remember thinking, I don't necessarily find it satisfying to him for him to go out on his own terms. I do agree that he did get to go out on his own terms with this massive assault on the compound where Jesse was being held. And yes, okay, he goes and makes it possible for Jesse to escape. But at the same time, he's the only reason Jesse is there in the first place. He very deliberately turned Jesse over to these people, believing at the time that they would kill him. And they didn't kill him. They imprisoned him instead. It wound up, as a fan of the show, particularly if you had followed Jesse as your kind of primary emotional anchor in the show, to have the end be, so he was imprisoned for a number of months in these terrible, horrible, punishing circumstances. But we're not really going to talk about that a whole lot. We're going to leave it to you to infer. And you, of course, could infer how horrible and traumatizing it was. But I thought it was very important. And there are some wonderful scenes that are so good at drawing out the early scene when Jesse first escapes and he winds up in the shower and he takes his gun into the shower. To me, was such an effective way of suggesting how unmoored he is and that he can't be separated from his gun for any period of time. And also, you know, Glenn, I think you're right that it can seem a little bit slow, but at the same time, I wonder if Faust would have found the beginning of that movie more affecting if he had been familiar with Badger and Skinny Pete, who are Jesse's friends, whose house he comes to. Because I found that sequence extremely moving.
Breaking Bad was Walter's story, ultimately. You know, and so we had to see that end for him. And what's interesting about El Camino is that it takes this character that was sort of used. I felt like Skyler's character, Walter White's wife, showed the horror of average people in Walter's life, their horror at what he was doing, how it corrupted his family. And then the story of Jesse is the story of him being mentored by this terrible person. Like Walter White is the worst mentor for him. And the movie calls back to that in a sequence that we can't talk about because it's too big a spoiler. But the movie restates that Walter White was a terrible mentor to Jesse. And Jesse has to find his own way. And that's what this movie is about.
This movie works really, really well as a kind of restrained Western. It's gorgeous camera work, gorgeous shots of the desert, as you've seen all through Breaking Bad. There are just constant nods to kind of Western iconography, including in a big climactic showdown, I think is enormously effective. And I just felt watching El Camino, like, this is what Netflix is for, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't necessarily put this movie in movie theaters, and you wouldn't necessarily put it on AMC as, you know, a 3-episode run of Breaking Bad. It works as a movie, but as a movie that you would watch via streaming services. And I think, you know, this is too low-key and too haunted to be like a major motion picture, but I'm really, really glad it exists, right? And I think this is exactly the way it should exist.
Hey, Linda, I want to bring you back in here. So talk to me a little bit, if you would, about Jesse Plemons, who returns here as Todd, this very affable, morally void monster.
Mm-hmm. One of the best things that I've heard recently about the character of Todd, I cribbed from my friend Alan Sepinwall, the TV critic, who said one of the things he said about Todd is, among other things, a failure of imagination. Todd has no notion of how to deal with anything except to kill whoever is causing a problem. And so one of the things that you find out about Todd is that Todd is an incredibly mundane kind of evil. And that's one of the things that I think is so fascinating about this, is that about including Todd, is that Todd is the opposite of Walter White, right? Walter White is evil, but he's also creative and extremely smart and has a million ways of doing things that make it possible for him to be a criminal. Todd is the opposite of that. Todd is just a sort of a blank assertion of evil. He's mostly not very intelligent. And so when you see Jesse, I thought it was so smart that rather than a series of little horrifying flashbacks, they chose this horrifying anecdote where you go back and you really follow Todd and Jesse on this trip that Todd made him go on. And you learn that evil comes in a variety of ways, but it all leads up to what I thought was the most kind of traditionally Breaking Baddiest kind of sequence, which is when Jesse it's part of this hunt for money, is looking for the money that is in Todd's apartment. And I thought that sequence, which Gilligan films with this kind of fragmented speeding up and slowing down kind of method, that looked to me the most like the kind of action sequences of Breaking Bad. And I enjoyed that part quite a lot.
All right. I think that brings us to the end. Tell us what you think about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Do you want to see future Breaking Bad movies? Skinny Pete Goes Hawaiian. Badger in Space. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Wix.com. With Wix, you can create your very own professional website. Choose a template you love and customize it with your own text, images, and videos. With hundreds of intuitive design features, you can tell your story exactly the way you want. It's easy to start a blog, an online store, or create an event, and you can share it all on social media in a click. Get started now by going to Wix.com. That's Wix.com/popculture to get 10% off.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Linda Holmes, what is making you happy this week?
What is making me happy this week is a new podcast that I discovered via NPR One. Thank you, NPR One. It is a podcast called Oddball, and it is out of WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida. And it is the story of a strange silver sphere that was discovered in someone's backyard in the 1970s, or in the woods behind someone's backyard in the 1970s. And I don't want to say too much more than that, but it is literally called Oddball, and it is about an oddball. And I found it a fascinating history podcast. It's fun. It's entertaining. And it's one of those things where you think, I don't know what anybody would have done with this story except a podcast, but a podcast is perfect. And I started listening to it this week, so I want to recommend Oddball out of WJCT in Jacksonville.
Thank you very much, Linda Holmes. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Okay, so we just talked about El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Sadly, this week, someone in the Breaking Bad universe died, the wonderful character actor Robert Forster.
Yeah.
Robert Forster gave so many wonderful performances, was also in a lot of terrible movies. He was the best thing about so many movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar for an incredible performance in Jackie Brown. He was great on Breaking Bad. Every time he popped up in something, he was wonderful in it. And it's tricky to put this in what's making me happy because I was absolutely crushed by his death. I was so saddened, but I really want to point people to a wonderful interview with Robert Forster that I was lucky enough to edit for the Onion AV Club back in 2000. Keith Phipps talked to Robert Forster. It is such a wonderful interview, and in it, he tells a story about an encounter with Marlon Brando that contains this incredible life lesson. I just could not recommend more that you go and dig this up. It will make you happy about something so incredibly sad. Just pouring one out for Robert Forster, a wonderful actor.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Great pick. Eric Deggans, what is making you happy this week?
So what's making me happy this week is Living With Yourself, which is this really funny series that's going to debut on Netflix starring Paul Rudd. It's his first TV series as a star. And he plays a guy who is kind of depressed, kind of failing at life, failing at work, failing in his marriage. And he decides to go to this spa to get rejuvenated. And what happens at this spa is they actually make a clone of you, and they make that clone physically the best version of you possible. And what he didn't realize is that what they usually do is they kill the original person, but they screwed up and didn't kill him. So he wakes up in this shallow grave, and he's stuck with this clone that is the ultimate version of him living his life. and the technology they use to make these two guys look like they're in the same room together, like they're fighting each other, like they're in contact with each other, like they're two different sides of the same personal coin is hilarious and wonderful. And it's twice the Paul Rudd. You gotta love it, right?
Yep. Thank you, Eric Deggans. That's Living With Yourself, premiering today on Netflix. What's making me happy is that I spent 4 days in the Smoky Mountains with a group of 14 friends I've known for more than 20 years. Eight of them picked Thursday to go hiking. The idiots. Six of us, like all right-thinking Americans, went to Dollywood. We were 15 minutes away from Dollywood, in fairness, so... If I hadn't gone, fun fact, the motorcycle cop from the Village People would have come personally and revoked my homosexuality. That's what happens. Now, my expectations of Dollywood were met precisely. The coasters were terrifying. The food, not so great. The attractions were mixed. Here's my advice. Skip the tour of Dolly's old tour bus. It's just not worth it. But head immediately to the Dollywood Museum. There's Grammys. There's gowns, which are squeezed over mannequins, which are clearly custom made. There are interactive exhibits, including one where you touch the screen to get quotes from Dolly. Choose topic below. I took a photo of this. Choose topic below. PMS, height, women's lib, it's 2019, marriage, looks, change, getting existential, movies, color, jokes. But the first thing you must do is head upstairs to the museum where a Dolly hologram, or Dollygram, is awaiting you. And she says at one point, "It was always my dream to be able to greet each and every person who comes to my park, and here we are, just another dream I've made come true." It's such a big flex. I love it. I love it. I love it. So please go to Dollywood if you can. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can follow Linda at Linda Holmes. You can follow Eric at Deggans. That's D-E-G-G-A-N-S. You can follow producer Emmanuel Johnson at Emmanuel _ speaks. You can follow our other producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica _ Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now, or you're not. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. And if you have a second, and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter, and we will see you here next week.
Maddie Sofia here, host of Shortwave, a new daily science podcast from NPR. We'll bring you new discoveries, everyday mysteries, and the science behind the headlines, all in about 10 minutes every weekday. So you come away a little smarter, or at least you look that way, on Trivia Night. Listen and subscribe now to Shortwave from NPR.